On September 13th, 2012, Writer House and Piedmont Council for the Arts presented a panel discussion, An Insider's Guide to Artist Colonies and Residencies, featuring visual artists Sharon Shapiro and Craig Pleasance, and writers Avery Chenoweth and Wendy Gavin Porter. Also, Sheila Pleasance of the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts and moderator Rachel Unkerfer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. All right. One of our panelists has to leave early, so I'm going to try and do this beginning stuff kind of quickly. I'm Rachel Unkerfer. I'm the president of Writer House, which is a nonprofit writing community over behind the Preston Avenue Bodos. We have writing space, we have classes, and we have author events. One of the reasons that we're sponsoring this panel is that a lot of you don't, you've heard of these things called writers' residencies or colonies, but you don't really understand how they work or if they're for you. So we talked to PCA and thought it would be a good idea to do a joint thing with including visual artists and writers, since a lot of the facilities are the same places. And that's how this panel came to be. What I'm going to do is sort of a lightning round here, just go down the table, have each panelist introduce him or herself, what kind of work they do, and which residency or colony places that they have been to. And then we'll do a couple of just quick down-the-line questions, and then we'll get into more depth and some other things. So why don't we start with Wendy, introduce yourself and what places have you, what kind of work do you do and what places have you been to?
Okay, I'm Wendy Porter and I am an English teacher at a high school in town. And I spent a lot of time before children spending my summers at colonies. So I've been to Ragdale and McDowell. I almost said McGuffey. McDowell County. And I've been to VCCA twice.
And you're a writer.
And I'm a writer. Yes, I am a writer. Amidst all the other things going on in my life right now.
I'm Sharon Shapiro. I'm a visual artist, painter, drawer. Collage is also something I do. And I started applying to residencies 3 years ago, and first I've done BCCA twice. I went in 2009, and then this past summer I went for a couple of weeks. I've been to Hambidge Center in Georgia, which is in a really nice place in the mountains in North Georgia. I grew up in West Virginia, so Hambidge reminds me a lot of West Virginia, even though it's in Georgia. It's in Raven Gap. And I'm getting ready to go to UCross, which is in Wyoming, for a couple of weeks. So I also have a daughter, and I wasn't able to go because I was a single mom for many years, but then I remarried several years ago, and so it enabled me to be able to go away for a couple of weeks. And I live here in Charlottesville.
I'm Sheila Gully-Pleasance, and I'm the Director of Artist Services at VCCA, so I think I'm the only one on the panel who's not a practitioner. I'm an enabler. So look forward to enabling as many artists, writers, and composers as we can at the VCCA, which is just 50 miles south of Charlottesville, and we serve about 400 artists, writers, and composers a year.
My name is Avery Chenoweth. I'm a writer, and I've been to a couple of these, VCCA, which was terrific, and to Yaddo, which was also terrific, and I'll just be talking about those. Specifically, and VCCA indirectly.
My name is Craig Pleasance. I'm a sculptor and installation artist. I've been also to the McDowell Colony, and I've been to the Oberforster Künstler House, which is in Bavaria, and to the VCCA's property in the south of France, which is called the Moulin Neuf. And I've also been to Friche-la-Belle de Mai, which is a great place in Marseille. And I'm also the artistic director at the VCCA.
And I'm a writer also. I've been to VCCA, and I've also been to a new, relatively new place called Writers in the Heartland in the middle of Illinois in a huge soybean field, which was an interesting experience. Just another quick question. So what's your favorite part of the residencies that you've been to? Do you have one particular thing that you can pull out and say, this was the best part of it for me? Wendy?
Absolutely. When I first went to residency, it was to Ragdale, and it was a couple of years after I graduated with my master's degree, and I had this thesis that I wanted to turn into a novel. And I was teaching, and I didn't have any part of my writer self left. And so I just decided I'm going to do this, and I went away for a month. And I spent, you know, the first 3 days looking over what I had in my novel, and I realized that it all had to go, every last word of it. And so I just chucked it, and I started over again, and it was such a liberating feeling. And so that was one, and then just part two of that was that one day I was inspired by a walk in this beautiful wildflowery field that they have on the grounds at Ragdale. And I came back in and I sat down and I wrote a short story from start to finish. And it took me all day. And when I was done, I felt like a writer again. It was like magic. And I went back out into the field and I just wandered around smiling like an idiot. And you know, the best thing about the colonies is being able to spend all day and night just concentrating, just living inside of the work. And there's nothing in the world like it.
I would agree that that's the best thing about it, is that your day, instead of fitting in time to work in the studio in between picking up the kids or getting groceries or doing laundry and or the job that you need to do or what teaching, whatever it is, that your day is just structured around that one thing, which is doing what you do and making art. And that's the best thing about it, I think, is that it's a reset button. It also makes you realize how much time that I feel like I waste when I'm not at a colony doing other things that just distract me and procrastinate. And when I'm there, I just want to work all the time. So it's definitely a huge reset button, which is helpful.
And I brought a few words from other fellows, since I had not, am not a practitioner. And this is from Aaron Collier, who writes about his experience. I really appreciate the safe pasture that you generously afford me, gifting me the opportunity to experiment and fail. And this is what we hear a lot from fellows about the experience of being at a college. Once the semester is in session, I find myself resorting only to work with tried and predictable outcomes in my studio practice. At VCCA, I've been given the opportunity to make horrendous work behind closed doors, accountable to no one, with the gracious time to discover solutions. The growth that springs from such a gift will be visible far beyond this single body of work that I've produced while in residence. So that's it.
Well, I found when I was at Yaddo and also at VCCA, but specifically Yaddo, that the landscape around the place was really magnetic. It's 400 acres. At the center of it stands a large mansion that looks like something, it's Gothic, it looks like something out of the Addams Family. So it casts a personality across every acre of the property. There's a large evergreen forest with running trails, and people would walk through that. And the people that you encounter there happen to be working on the same sort of very recondite work that you're working on. So imagine having office talk with people who work in the same office. You've never had it before, and suddenly everybody gets it. It's almost like a recovery program. What you're recovering from is real life. Because what you're trying to do, especially as a writer, is find a place where you can dream consistently. Dream daily, dream for hours, step out of the dream, and then sustain the dream the next day. And you find a lot of people there who will sustain that dream with you. And that's very, very powerful, because it as everybody knows, as you all know, I'm sure, it's hard to do when everybody's knocking on the door and wants something from you. So it was really the personalities who loved it, the landscape that supported it, and the opportunity to dream consistently for, you know, a month or so. Thanks.
I had two very different experiences. When I went to McDowell Colony, I was facing a deadline. I had a big show coming up at the Virginia Museum, and I was under a lot of pressure. And so I was concentrating on that. And then when I went off to the residency in Marseille, it was completely open-ended, and I didn't have a deadline, didn't have pressures. And I found that experience to be much more viable in kind of the same sort of way. You know, there's kind of a multitude of paths you can take, and you go down one, and you're able to have the luxury of just following this path wherever it goes. So, and in Marseille, the residency program was in this enormous old Gauloises factory. So imagine like 2 football fields, and then side by side, stacked up 4 high. So there were these vast, vast interior spaces, basically unused. So I was able to wander through those. I was making big pieces of sculpture made from cigarette boxes, empty cigarette boxes, not cartons, but cardboard boxes stacked up in kind of building forms. But just the freedom that was available to me was kind of the most beneficial thing.
So I want to talk about a little bit more specifically about some of these places. Wendy, you're the only person here who's been to Ragdale, I think, and you've been to McDowell, and Craig's also been to McDowell, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what Ragdale is like, sort of what the personality of it is, and also what your experience of McDowell was?
Sure. Ragdale is in Illinois. It's right outside of the town whose name escapes me.
Lake Forest.
Lake Forest, thank you. And it's an old sort of estate that was lived in by the Shaw family, and they were all really incredibly prolific and dedicated artists themselves. And so there are little sculptures around the grounds of this beautiful house. There's 3 different structures that you can have rooms in. And so unlike some of the other places, you have a room, and so you're next to a bunch of other people, but each of the rooms has its own distinctive flavor. And there's a guest book that you can read through years back, just people who have stayed in that room. And it's wonderful to find the name of someone that you knew in some other incarnation of life and then add your own experience to the book. And it's pretty close to this little town center, and it is It's just, there's a beautiful, gorgeous old tree there that I was enamored of, and lots of kind of like BCCA, sort of like sculpture garden-y things, because one of the people was a sculptor, and the bird girl from Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, that's, you know, that artist was there, and so there's a statue of that there. And in the evenings, people come and have dinner together, and then you sort of get your own food the other times during the day in this common area kitchen. And there's always really warm, wonderful conversations. And I ran into this woman named Audrey Niffenegger, and I started talking to her. And actually, we were great friends while we were there, although we hardly ever saw each other because we were always writing. But and when she told me the plot of her novel, I was like, really? Traveling, leaves the clothes, love story? Huh, well, whatever floats your boat. So that's really funny. She's a fabulous visual artist, too. And, you know, I thought, well, good. I'm glad that you, you know, are venturing into the world of fiction and the visual art. But it was great. And then one other thing about Ragdale is that there was a certain period of time where it seemed like everybody had a ghost in their story that just showed up. And I thought that was really cool. At McDowell, it's very different because you get your own little cottage in the middle of the woods. And I stayed in a recently built one that was really kind of palatial. And it was, you know, I didn't want to break anything or leave stains anywhere, so it made me kind of nervous. But so that was like true isolation. And they come and they leave your lunch in a little basket on the stoop so they don't bug you at all. And then when you're done with your day, then you go up to the common area and you have dinner if you choose. The great thing about these places, all of them, is that you can be as sociable or as reclusive as you want to, and nobody thinks a thing about it. I could go for days without not talking to a soul, or I could, hang out with people and make good friends, and it all would depend on the year and on the day, and it was all okay. So the only thing that was troubling to me about McDowell, where I did some fabulous work, is that I got a little freaked out at night because, you know, it's just a little spooky as all.
You were in a standalone house when you were at McDowell?
Yeah.
No one else in the house?
Nope.
Oh.
I thought they were all like that.
No, that's not cool.
You were there in the winter.
I was in the winter, yeah.
Yeah, I was in the
Maybe
summer.
Was
I think
the
they
summer
open up hour. Those outer cabins. There were more people there.
Yeah, I was in a house with like four or five different people.
Yeah. I would have liked at least one of them. I mean, it sounds good on paper, but 3 a.m., you know.
Bear starts crunching.
Yeah, right. But it was gorgeous. The birds were fabulous, and the conversation was great. There were a lot of people who came from New York that I met from McDowell, and it was wonderful both places. Now, can you tell me what time it is, just so I can keep
yeah.
it?
It is 12:25.
Okay,
so you need to duck out in a minute.
Pretty much.
You mentioned. I wanted to ask everybody at some point about negatives or drawbacks or trade-offs, and it sounds like one of them for you was being alone at night in the woods.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you kind of, just on balance, I mean, everything's trade-offs, so what are the things that you might think are drawbacks?
Well, I mean, it's hard if you have people who are waiting for you, and it's always, you know, homesickness is something that happens, and it's for me, it was always kind of a comforting part of the process to just use the feeling in some way. But I did miss home sometimes, and it didn't mean that I wasn't thrilled to be away from home, but I would say that could be seen as a drawback of sorts. And you know, with that much sustained concentration for that many days, I think that, you know, I love the thing about failing, because failure is just a part of it. There were many days when I would write 10 pages all day long, and I would go have dinner and then come back and read through my 10 pages, and out they go, you know, and then start over again, and maybe write till midnight and like write the real version and then go to bed, and that was great. But sometimes, you know, if you write 50 pages and then you realize you've taken a wrong turn, then it can be kind of frustrating. But, you know, that's not really a drawback either. I think it's just all good.
Let me just ask you one more question before you run off. Sorry. My list. How did you decide where to apply, and how did you know when you were ready, okay, it's time for me to do this?
Well, I knew I was ready because I knew I just wasn't writing, and it was making me miserable. And I had to make a radical change. And I figured the best way to do it would just be to get myself away from my real life and just reconnect with my writer self. And it really worked beautifully for that. And I would, you know, what I did for all those years is I would come up with maybe 100 pages over the summer in that 1 month, and then spend the rest of the year revising in tiny increments when I had the time. Here's a drawback. I have a hard time now writing in small increments because I feel like, you know, it's just not enough time. But where I decided to apply was based on where I could reasonably get to, I guess, and when the deadlines were. And that's about the size of it. I applied to many more places than I got into, for sure.
Thanks. And that's one of the things I want to talk about. That's a good segue to Sheila. Can you talk just a little bit about the admissions process? And thank you very much, Wendy. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Talk a little bit about at VCCA, what that process is. And I think some people that I've talked to in Charlottesville, they're a little nervous about, you know, am I really good enough to apply to one of these places? Do I have to be, a major literary or art, star artist to get in somewhere? Can you talk a little bit about at least VCCA's?
Yeah. As far as the VCCA works, there is a panel process that reviews work. So there's a panel of peers. It's really other fellows who jury work pro bono for us. And what you do as part of the application process is you do submit work samples. If you're a painter, you submit images of that work. Writers submit writing. Everyone submits in their genre, and that work is juried by someone in their genre. And then the panel is the one who makes the recommendation. I think one of the things that Wendy pointed out is just like you're applying to get into a journal. I think you know that you're not going to get everywhere you apply to. There are a lot of people who need places to work. There are a lot of people applying. But we serve about 400 artists a year as writers, composers, and visual artists. And they're from all over the world. And the criteria for getting in is the quality of the work and not the thickness of the resume. So we have unpublished people who are coming to have residencies at the VCCA, whose work has gotten was well regarded by the panel. We have people who've won the National Book Award coming. So it's a wonderful way for people in all levels and all ages to kind of join in this experience. I would encourage you to apply. You're not risking anything. I mean, there's we're out there to serve the community, and if you have specific questions, I'd be happy to answer those. But you just submit your work, submit your best work, and know that you may not get in the first time. If you don't get in the first time, keep applying. And there are a number of communities that offer these opportunities.
Are there particular times of year that are more... I always superstitiously, maybe rationally, thought, don't apply for summer because all the college professors are off.
That's very rational.
That's when everyone wants to be there. So if you really want a better chance, maybe apply in a different time.
Anytime.
The best deadline is day after tomorrow. there's a deadline, September the 15th. So
run home.
September the 15th for residencies from February through the end of May. But anytime there's an academic break is when it's the most competitive. So summer is particularly competitive. Early January, oddly, and there's a particular week in March.
Spring break.
Yeah. And we have, volumes of people trying to get during that time.
Yeah, so can you just talk briefly about what that application process is and how long it takes to hear back and what your different residency periods are?
So. Yes. For instance, the application deadline, which is day after tomorrow, September 15th, is a postmark deadline. If you wanted to come to be considered for a residency from February through May, you'd apply for that deadline. We ask that you submit three sets of work samples. We have a jury. Our jury is composed of the panel is all over the country. So at this point, we're working toward electronic submissions, but at this point, it really is sent out to two different panelists. If they differ in their recommendation, it's sent out to a third. I think it's a rigorously fair system, in my opinion. And then what happens is it takes a while for that to happen and for us to process the information that you've sent in. Notification is by the end of November, so September 15th, end of November, a couple of months, and then you would get a notification of when you were scheduled during that next four-month period. And we have three application deadlines a year, September 15th, January 15th, and May 15th. and they're generally for the time about 4 months, 4 to 6 months in the future.
And so, and at VCCA, the person applying specifies how long they would like to be there. Some places are
Some places are more rigid. Our residencies generally run from 2 weeks to 2 months. And you, on the application, as you'll see, if you can, you can access it online. There are a number of our newsletters. There's some up here, and there's some by the drinks. But go to our website, and you can specify. There are plenty of people who have families who say, I can only come for, you know, a really limited period of time. We do consider residencies less than 2 weeks if that's what would work best for you. And 2 weeks to 2 months. And then we have people arriving pretty much every day. Some places, Ragdale, I think, is one where they have everyone arrives on a set day, and you sort of have a class of people who are there for a month. The VCCA, some people are there for 2 weeks, some people are there three, four, five, and they're coming and going all the time. So you may cross paths with as many as 50 people during the time that you're there. There are 25 at a time at VCCA.
Okay, thank you. And Sharon, if you can talk, well, we're going to go back now, talk a little bit about what Wendy was talking about, which is the, comparing or just talking about the specific places that you've been and what sort of what what the personality was or what your experience of that was.
Well, having it's interesting to hear her say that about McDowell, because I had been to VCCA in the summer of 2009, first residency I'd ever been to, and there were like 24 people or something like that there, and it's very social, at least in the summer, and at least with that group of people, it's very social, and we would have dinner and then hang out at night. We'd go back to our studios usually, or my friends that were writers would go back and write, and then we would get back together at about 10 o'clock at night and hang out in the common room for hours. I think when I'm at VCCA, I will say this, I don't sleep at all. I sleep about 4 or 5 hours a night, but it's actually the best, it's the best feeling of not sleeping that I ever have. And home, if I tried to do that, I would be so tired. But I'm so invigorated there that I'm up late talking to people, and I've made some great friends there, which I'm going to mention. And then I'm up early because I'm wanting to start working. So then I go to Hambidge. Well, I go a year and a half later, which is in Georgia, as I said, and there it's the same thing where there are 9 cottages. So you live and work in your little cottage, and you're responsible for your own breakfast and your own lunch. They don't bring you anything. And then there's dinner in the common area. And I did have that little feeling about the being a little bit afraid at night. Actually, I deferred my residency in Hambidge because one of my good friends that I met my first time at VCCA, Sue Johnson, had told me about Hambidge. I applied, I got in, and then Sue calls me and she's like, well, do you know which cottage you're in? And I said, well, I think I'm in, well, the one, I can't remember. I said, I'm in this one. And she's like, oh, really? I don't think you're going to like that one, Sharon. You're going to be scared. And there's no cell service. And it was the, and I'm so glad that I deferred, because when I saw the one that I was going to be in, it was like a mile, literally a mile walk from the dining hall at night, and it would, you'd have to have a flashlight. I mean, you know, and there was no cell service. And so I did get into Fisher, which is the, another cottage, and I wasn't nearly as frightened, but Sue was, Sue's great. In fact, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. I have two friends that I've made that I think I'll always be friends with now. Sue Johnson, a visual artist. She's based in Maryland. Actually Richmond now, but and Peter Ramos, a poet who's at Buffalo State. But the first night that I go to VCCA, I don't know what to expect. I've never been to a colony before. So I go into my room, I unpack everything, and I come down for dinner. And Sue's been at many residencies. And she's sitting there, and she's sort of holding court. And I had left one of my catalogs from my show at Second Street Gallery that had been a few years before on the table, because artists leave their stuff, you know. And she's sitting there, and I come down for dinner, and she's like, before dinner, everybody gathers, and she's like, you're Sharon. And I said, yeah. And she's like, huh, interesting, very soft-spoken, you look very sweet, but you are twisted. She's like, I like that. So we, like, immediately became good friends. Yeah. So, anyway. But I like both of them. I like the both, the very social and that you're in the studios, and then also the separate. I did like the waking up being in the studio, too, which is more like McDowell, I guess, or can be.
Yeah, we had a really interesting setup. I was not there in the summer. The summer, the mansion is in full use, and people go to studios. I was there in the fall. So the building that I was in, I forget the name of it, it looked like it was about the size of a largish bed and breakfast. There were about four or five people living in it. I had my own room, own bathroom. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it sounds a little crazy, but I think it was maid service. I mean, I think, as I recall, everything, the bed was always made and everything was always cleaned up and put together. We ate in the stables. The downstairs area of the stables had been converted into business offices. And upstairs, it was a large kitchen, a large library, internet room, and then a dining room with a big table that would sit about 20-some people. And there were probably about 15 of us. I was there in October to Thanksgiving. And we became very, very close friends, and we went everywhere together, did everything. We sneaked into Saratoga Springs racetrack and ran around. Getting drunk and falling down like teenagers. And it was terrific fun. But there was a certain atmosphere to it that is beyond the geography and beyond the location. And New York State was really gorgeous in the fall, and it was a warm period. The extra personality to the place were the legends that were still sledding down the front stairs drunkenly or playing the piano. Some of the writers who'd been there included Catherine Ann Porter, John Cheever, Updike, Saul Bellow, you name it. But the one man who impressed me very clearly in the first two or three days was a composer. And he said, I can't believe the piano they gave me. And we're all at dinner and say, why? What's wrong with the piano? He goes, oh, nothing's wrong with it. It's a beautiful grand piano. You're not going to believe this piano. And I said, well, what about it? He said, Aaron Copland wrote Appalachian Spring on that piano. We're like, really? Can we see it? So we all went over to the big summer house, and it was this grand room that was like a dressing room for Katrina Trask, one of the millionaires who created all this thing. And there was this grand piano, and we all sat down and tentatively played a few keys that Copland had played and Gershwin had played and Bernstein had played. And the next day, he was like, wow. That piano, I'm telling you, what a piano. We're like, yeah, what a piano. And then the next day at breakfast, everybody says, have you seen him? Like, no, we haven't seen him. People are walking to lunch and say, have you seen him? And like, no, have you seen him? Then that night, someone comes up from downstairs and says, has anybody seen him today? And he had disappeared.
Really?
He had lasted 48 hours and had freaked himself out so completely that he had finally wigged out and just run away. And he didn't tell anybody where he went. All his stuff was in a room. And he just got in the car and drove because he could not stand the idea that he was, unfortunately, in his head, he couldn't stand the idea that he was competing with Aaron Copland. And nobody competes with Appalachian Spring. You just got to love it and forget it. And he was unable to do that. So there were two aspects to the social dynamic, and one of them was the closeness that we had that felt like the best of grad school, the best of collegiality, where you can say something incredibly boring, like, you know that introduction to a character in Chapter 3? I'm thinking of moving it up five paragraphs of Chapter 2. And the person goes, yeah, cool. Instead of saying, whatever, man. Can we change the channel? So there was that collegiality that was really potent and felt. And then there were the legends that kind of drifted over the place and haunted it. John Cheever and somebody else sledding down the front stairs wildly drunk. And that stuff had a glamour to it, but it kind of faded away very quickly when you got into the business of writing something poorly and having to throw it away. So it was a great experience, though. It was great. I would add just one last little detail that I ran into, and that was that what these places offer is exponential time. You can think about it all day. You can work about it all week. They feed you. They virtually bathe you. I mean, they take care of you. So I fell into this thing where I could do the same thing with the writing. So a 15-page front porch on a novel I was working into, by the time I was done with it, was like a 70-page front porch. I had gone, let all that time go into the prose, and it got longer and duller. And that, I think, is kind of like the secret trap when you have too much of a muchness. So there was a need for more timely deadline and completion. And that's a little abstract, but I hope you'll follow some of it. Thanks.
Okay.
Before I forget to say this, you've heard a variety of descriptions of a variety of different places, and I just want to be sure that everybody knows that there are hundreds of these places out there. So I'm going to tell you a couple of websites that you should write down. One of them is the Alliance of Artist Communities, and there's a list out there that I'm not sure that these two are on there. But the Alliance of Artist Communities is basically the consortium of these places in the United States. And Res Artistes is the consortium of these places internationally. And the Alliance has 370 residency places listed. And Res Artistes has 350 listed, and they're not the same ones. So there's about 700 places like this out there. Some of them only take one person a year. Some of them only take five people at a time. Some of them are like the VCCA, they take 25 at a time. But it runs the gamut. So those are the resources that you should take away, for sure. As far as personalities go, I just want to kind of give you a real thumbnail sketch of the few places that I've been. First of all, VCCA, which I've never really officially been in residence at, but I lived there for 17 years on the property. There are two principal buildings. There's the residence hall and the studio barn, we call it. And that's really, everybody lives in the residence and everybody works in the barn. And that's kind of one of the reasons that the VCCA becomes so collegial, is because you're kind of inhabiting the same places. And the studios are really all in one building. They're only a five-minute walk from each other. The barn is this gorgeous 1930s Normandy rambling style barn. So if you haven't seen the VCCA, I encourage you to come down. It's only an hour away. McDowell is similar size, but all the studios are separate cottages, and I guess Wendy must have maybe even been living in her studio or something. But in my experience, the residence where you spent the night were in four or five buildings, and there were five or six people in each building. All of them were a good walk from the studios, which are pretty much out of sight of each other. The Oberpfalzer Künstler Haus is in Bavaria. Both of the first two are totally in a rural area. Oberpfalzer Künstler Haus is in a small town of 20,000 people, something like that. It's a little bit on the edge of town, but it's a walk to town. There's only five people there at a time, all the studios are together in one building, and you live in the same building, but the spaces are separate. At VCCA's property at Moulin-en-Neuf in the south of France, only four people at a time. It's in a tiny little village of 900 people, gorgeous village, right on the Garonne River. And the studio building and the housing building, which it looks like the VCCA is going to be able to buy, abut each other. So there are four big bedrooms in the residence house, and there's four right-sized studios in the studio building. So there's four people there at the same time. And then Marseille is, of course, in Marseille, which is amazing. And the building was astonishing. It was like I said, an old cigarette factory. And that's not exactly... there's a few international people who are there doing residencies, but largely the inhabitants of that residency program are artists who live in Marseille. So they have their own house, and they come and have the studio in this big building.
What about your sort of the personalities of the places, or how much socializing did you do?
At Marseille, there was a lot of socializing because the artists kind of all knew each other, and they would invite those of us that were internationals to go out with them and stuff like that. At Oberpfalzer Künstler Haus,
Again, it was a kind of a tight group of people because there were so few of them. But you had to, you know, everybody was cooking for themselves, and so, you know, unless somebody kind of made the suggestion that you all cook together, you're all kind of bumping into each other in the kitchen trying to make dinner and stuff. McDowell is similar to the DCCA in that, you know, everything is provided for you. The personality of McDowell I would characterize as kind of a little more formal than the DCCA, and maybe it's because of the kind of the heritage of it.
So let's talk for a minute about money. I know that's something on people's mind. Oh, before we talk about that, make sure on your way out that you get one of these handouts, because there are websites. If under other resources, last year when I was at VCCA, instead of working on my novel, I created a wiki for writers' residencies. Every residency, every place has their own website. They vary widely on what they tell you and what they forget to mention. So I created the wiki for people who have been to various places who don't have access to a panel like this to go on there and read what other people's experiences have been. And please share and go on there and write your stuff and Avery. So this is a way to have a virtual panel discussion about what the different places are like. But something else I was going to mention about. If you're not familiar with the wiki, it's like Wikipedia. Everyone can add their own information in there. But let's talk about... I'm sorry. One other thing before we go to that, before we talk about money, I just want to throw out one of the places that I went last fall before I went to VCCA was it's called Writers in the Heartland, and it's only been in existence 3 years. But it's some people in Chicago that... wanted to set up a residency program, and it's in the middle of Illinois. They have four writers at a time for 1 week, and then they do that two different times, and it's completely free for the artist. You just have to get there, and it's only for writers. And the unusual thing about it, and there's information in the wiki about this, but the unusual thing about it is it's at a spa that's on an old dairy farm, and there are other people there at the spa in another building. It's like a hotel. They have massage, and they have all the, you know, they give you a free massage, and there's a swimming pool and all kinds of facilities there. But then the writers are in this separate detached house that's a little bit away from the main building, and just four people in this one house. And so that was quite an unusual situation, because I'm not aware of any other place where you're mixed in with the general population, shall we say. And we had meals with the other people that were there as guests, if we chose. We could just bring a tray back. But after working all day, none of us actually in our group that week wanted to have dinner alone after we'd been alone all day. So we all did go to dinner at the main building and interacted with these housewives from Chicago who were down at the spa for the week. So that was quite an interesting experience, but it was completely free. And you just have to have some connection with the Midwest. Grew up there, went to school there, something along those lines. But it was completely subsidized. You just have to get yourself there, and everything else was taken care of from that point on. And so that segues into this question of cost. Now, again, you have to look at the websites for all these different places, because every place is completely different. But I thought maybe we could just sort of go down the line and talk about the places that we've been to and just briefly what the financial arrangement was with those places. Sharon?
I think BCCA and Hambidge are similar in that it's they suggest an amount a per diem, but it's sort of a sliding scale. So it was similar to that. It's like a couple hundred dollars a week, I believe, is what I is what I, maybe not even that much, maybe it's $180 a week, something. I tried to base it loosely off my income from making art. It's very reasonable, in other words. And then UCross, where I'm about to go, is they pay for everything, you just have to get there. So it's, which is exciting and also kind of scary, because it brings up that imposter syndrome that I think a lot of us artists have, where it's like, am I really good? Am I really an artist? And they're going to pay for me to come there and do what? You know, it's like, okay, I guess I better get my act together. But, yeah.
Well, at BCCA, actually, we do have a suggested per diem, but fellows pay what they can afford. So once you've done the work of applying and getting in, you know, you are accepted at whatever you've said that you can afford to pay. I mean, we're like one big writer, visual artist trying to keep the doors open, so we ask that people pay what they can. But we know that people are at different places along in life, and so people pay what they can afford, and we do the rest. We have three prepared meals a day. You have a private studio, private bedroom, many of them have a shared semi-private bath. But you get there and you focus on your work, and then we make it work from there with help from foundations and other organizations and foundation grants and the different commission, NEA, and individual support from artists. So what you can afford. If you get in, you can afford to get there, be there.
Yeah, I know. When I was there and it was free, and might still be. I suspect it is. The last time I looked at it, I think they had even begun to offer to offset your rent while you're there. And the reason for that is, of course, that when you're not working, I mean, a lot of people come up from New York and have jobs working at, MTV, babysitting the children there. And so when they go up to the colony, they have to, stop working. Yaddo got to the point where they were saying, you know, if you're making X a week to pay your rent, we'll help you pay your rent so you can come up here and work. Because that was a deterrent to a lot of people to walk away from a job. And that's the reality. You can't walk away from a job. And if you have 2 weeks of vacation a year, you know, it's really, it becomes a very self-selecting group of people who have that much free time and can afford to go there. So they were trying to broaden the reach, I think.
Yeah, when I went to McDowell, they suggested, just like the BCC, they suggested that you contribute $15 a day, and now I think McDowell is completely free. There's several places that don't charge anything. Moulin Neff, the BCCA's place, there is a set fee, and it's
$64 a day.
$64 a day. We would like that to go down. The Elber Foster Kunstler House is free. The European colonies tend to be free because, you know, government subsidy in Europe is entirely different than it is in the States. So the place in Marseille was free. The Elber Foster Kunstler House was free.
So let's talk just a little bit about, like anything else, like universities, like anything, there's sort of a hierarchy. I mean, there is kind of, you know, there are the places that are the prestigious ones, like Yaddo, where Cheever went, or, you know, where the novelists whose books you see in the bookstore probably go there. You know, I know nobody likes to talk about stuff like that, but I think for people who have never even applied to somewhere, I think it might be helpful to kind of, for everybody to sort of maybe just jump in and kind of say, well, you know, if you're just starting out and you want to kind of put your toe in the water or whatever, you might not want to start with Yaddo, for example, because you're up against, you know, Michael Chabon and Ayelet Waldman and, you know, people like that. Any thoughts about, you know, just ideas about, again, myself, the reason I applied for the Midwestern one was I thought, well, how many people are there in the Midwest that are writers? A lot fewer than, you know, that are going to go to an international place. So I'm going to start there. I have a better shot. And then once I had the confidence of that, I thought, okay, now I feel confident to apply to UCCA. Actually, I had applied to VCCA before that and not gotten in. Then I got up the nerve to apply again. But, I mean, you know, any hints, thoughts about if you're a first-timer, how do you sort of ease your way into this kind of a situation, Sharon? And then, you know, everybody just sort of jump in as you want.
Yeah, I applied to Yaddo before. Actually, I did apply there before I applied to VCCA because I just didn't know any better. I did not get in. I applied to Ragdale. I did not get in. And then I applied to VCCA, got in, then applied to Ragdale and got waitlisted. So there is this certain thing where not that VCCA is any less, though. Like, I don't want to make it sound like that because I don't think that. I think that it's larger. I think Hambidge is probably even maybe... But then again, I know an artist that got into Ragdale and didn't get into Hambidge. So there's always this crapshoot element to it as well. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that.
Because I've looked at it from both sides as an applicant and as somebody who's seen the applications. And I'll tell you that, you know, seeing that somebody has been at McDowell, you go, oh, they've been at McDowell. But that doesn't change your opinion. Our panelists are looking at the work. Mm-hmm. Our panelists are judging you on your work. And I would encourage everybody here to, the first place you apply to is VCCA. Because it's close, because it's a great place.
You're taking 400 artists a year, which is way more than a lot of places.
We do take a lot of artists, yeah.
And that does help you.
But I would also encourage you not to be intimidated by anybody. Not Yaddo, not McDowell. Just go ahead and put your application out there. Because, you know what, you're going to be looked at by a different panelist every time you apply. And some of those panelists are not going to like the work you're doing, and some of the panelists are going to think it's brilliant. So... don't be intimidated.
When I was at Yaddo the first couple of weeks, there was a really nice collegiality between everybody. And it was really, really easygoing. But these things have changing personalities. It's like a French scene. Somebody else comes in, and the whole dynamic changes. So somebody showed up at the end, and I liked him enormously. He was a very nice guy. He just had a book that was either out or about to come out, and it created a huge buzz. And he kind of had a real scratchy personality. And there were people around the dinner table getting inflamed, and then, you know, they were all beginning to itch and scratch, and this guy was just shooting people down. He's thriving on this buzz, like he's the hit of New York, and he can't contain it, and people are beginning to bridle, and suddenly, like, a couple of us look around like, well, there goes the party. And then one or two others showed up, one of whom was enormous and lugubrious and just entered the room like an octopus from a horror movie, like, whoa. And you're like, wow, 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 where did it all go? And everybody kind of sorted themselves out because, you know, every personality is different and they change a lot. But I also, this is related, it's not on the mark of colonies, but I went to Sewanee Writers Conference a couple of times, and the cliquishness there was very defined, and it was a real pecking order.
I've heard that about writers' conferences.
Yeah, it was extraordinary, and I never saw more adept political suck-ups in one hen house than at the Sewanee Writers Conference.
No, and I was there and had a different experience. So I think it also depends on what year and who the people are.
Well, there was one guy I liked this guy. I didn't know him very well, but we hung out a couple of times. He published a few stories, or he was just working there. He was not going there. I was on a fellowship and then a scholarship or whatever it was. And he was talking to the teachers on the side and presenting his stories to them, and they loved him. They thought he was absolutely fantastic. One of them called the Atlantic. He sent a story to the Atlantic. He was accepted by the Atlantic while he was there. And it was really remarkable to see this kind of success, particularly from somebody who was so unassuming. His book came out, and the book got great reviews. And a librarian in some college I've now forgotten read the first line of the first story and said, "I've read this before somewhere." And she sourced it out. This little genius who's read everything in the world sourced it out to a 1924 story collection. And sure enough, he had dusted off everything from the 20s, appropriated it. That's the word in plastic arts. In literary arts, it's called plagiarism. And he just republished a lot of this stuff under his own name. That's why he was so good. But the thing that was fun was watching his ascent, because he went off like a bottle rocket. Anyway.
One of the resources, again, that's going to be on Rachel's list, the Alliance of Arts Communities has a directory, and it does talk about, on each community, it says stipends, number of applications received, numbers accepted, so you can kind of see, like one of those college things, percentage of acceptance rate, so you can see which are the more competitive and which are the perhaps less competitive. So that's, they have charts. I mean, this again is on the website too.
Right,
what they provide. Some of them don't provide meals. Some of them provide 3 meals a day. So that's in terms of deciding what would suit your needs. What's close by, how hard is it to get to some place, and you can sort all that stuff out.
Yeah, and they also have a website. I don't know how much of that information is on their website and how much is only in the book, but there are a number of directories of places that are listed on the handout that we have here. I think we'll do one more question, and then we'll throw it open to the audience. Let's see, we've talked about that. Let's talk a little bit about, we've talked a little about this, but not much in depth, like sort of typical day and work rhythms, and the, Sharon, you mentioned a little bit about BCCA, but how did your days go at these sorts of places?
Usually what I do is, I've been there both, all three times I've been in the warmer months, so I usually would get up, look at the work that I had done the night before, go for a walk, because I like to be outside, or go for a run, or do something outside, come back, work for a couple hours, BCCA, there's a communal lunch, but that was the thing at Hambidge, you're on your own, so I would just sort of work all day, which is pretty awesome, and then break for dinner, and usually the break for dinner is a little while. It's not like you're eating by yourself, so it's an hour at BCCA, and then you go back to work. Like I said, I would go back to work until about 10 o'clock, from like 7:30 till 10:30 at night, and then socialize if I wanted to, or watch a movie or something. Hambidge, I would work really late because there wasn't the social thing so much after dinner. There were 9 of us. We actually all got along really well, and we would have a good conversation at dinner. But then we would just go back, and I would find that I would work until, 12 or what, 1, and then read, which is also great, because at home I find when I try to read before I go to bed, I fall asleep. So, and the other cool thing I'll say is that I did talk to, like Wendy was saying, about the doing work that you don't, experimenting and doing stuff that you don't normally do at home, was when I got to Hambidge. Peter Ramos, my friend that I met at BCCA, we were on the phone like the second night I was there, and he said, "What are you going to do while you're there?" And I was like, "I don't know. I don't have any deadlines. I brought some canvases. I was going to paint some drawings I'd sketched out." And he's like, "But you know how to paint. Like, you paint, you do paintings. Did you bring any paper?" And I was like, "Actually, I'm having this huge roll of paper shipped here. It's the biggest paper I've ever worked on, but I don't know what I'm going to do with it." And he's like, "Well, do that. Do the good work." I just remember him saying that, like, do the good work. In other words, do something completely different. Scare yourself a little bit. And so I started this whole new body of work when I was there, because I just unrolled the paper and tacked it up, and I was like, I'm going to do something different. And if it sucks, nobody's going to see it. So there is that.
You kind of alluded to this. I mean, the starting something new versus working on something that you brought there, sort of like preparing? I mean, I've heard this different stories from all different people about how they plan. Some people mm-hmm. plan everything before they get there so that they can optimize the time, and then other people feel that they just want to, you know, start something new. Or how do you approach that, Avery?
Well, I found that was going on the whole time when I was there. Some people would arrive with a book contract, and they had to deliver a manuscript, and they were like running under a deadline trying to finish. And others, there was this one guy who arrived, and he spent several days reading. And this guy had a scratchy personality. He just laid around reading for days and days. And I thought that was great to have just to use it for that, to refill the well and to read. We had kind of a routine, and that was helpful at Yaddo, because I didn't want to do a complete free fall into shapelessness. So I think breakfast was served from 8 to 9 or 7 to 8. We had lunches prepared for us according to the menu we filled out the night before. Lunch was in a box, like as if we were construction workers. And everybody would grab their box and walk off to their studios, you know, hi-ho, hi-ho, to work we go. And I had a sculptor studio with a writing area in it and big bay windows that overlooked the garden. And that was really, really entrancing. And it was the only real rule there was that you had to be quiet all day. No loud music, no visiting other cottages, no interrupting of any kind. And he didn't even really encourage you to walk around much, except after lunch. You know, so the morning was really devoted to hardcore stuff. And then by, I think, 2 or 3 in the afternoon, they had a shuttle arrive that would take us into Saratoga Springs. And Saratoga Springs, has anybody here seen it? Been there? Look it up online when you get home. But they must have had a building code that went in saying no buildings after 1910 will be tolerated in this town. Because it's wrought iron railings, it's gilded, it's gorgeous. I mean, it's real Rockefeller, old Rockefeller kind of town. So they would take you in there, and you get to enjoy the town. Then they bring you back, and people were slipping away for day trips in the late afternoon. At dinner, we'd convene, and I think if I'm not mistaken, in the month or so that I was there, we didn't repeat a meal. And every single meal was on a standard like you couldn't afford it on the downtown mall. I mean, they might have called themselves cooks, but I would have called them chefs. I mean, they delivered stuff every night in abundance that was so delicious. It was almost like the freshman 10. After a couple of weeks, everybody started portaging about this weight loss program to get over the food. Then we would, you know, convene, walk around the place, people go back to their studios to work, conversation, and because everybody kind of got into this rhythm, we explored the place, tell ghost stories, or just hang out. I mean, it felt very young and escapist for quite a while. It was just great.
So, I hope what we've tried to do here is give you a flavor, because you can go on all these websites and they'll tell you, you know, certain bare bones facts about their place, but I think you can really only get a flavor of it by talking to people about it. So I hope we've been able to do that. I'm going to open to questions now, and we've got about 15 minutes, I think, for that. And just anything you want to?
Excuse me, I just wanted to make sure that I understood the application process, and I just wanted to use VCCA as the example. If the artist submits and is not accepted, they can go to the next deadline date and mm-hmm. submit the same images, the same CV and letters of recommendation, and a different group will see that work, or is it better to start with a whole new application content?
Or use someone else's CV, that would probably be
though. The way that it works is that when you initially apply, basically we start, you have a record at the VCCA, you start a file on you, so that your work would be reviewed, and that review, the response of the panel would be kept on file. You don't ever have to submit letters of recommendation again. People are usually happy to hear that because we keep those on file.
Yeah.
Some communities you have to submit the letters of recommendation every time. Here you submit letters once, we have those that on file that we can refer to. But we do, so that review of your work can stand really for 3 years. People submit new work if they'd like to, and if you didn't get in, you may want to. It would be seen by a different panelist. So
let me just clarify one thing. There's not getting in, which is oftentimes it's just a matter of there not being enough space. But there also we do have a level of accomplishment that you have to meet at the BCCA as judged by the panelists. So sometimes you do get a letter that says, we cannot accommodate you, and please resubmit again after 2 years. So in that case, you do have to submit new work. But if it's just a matter of there not being enough space for you,
and you're seeing a letter that says
you'd
like to be
on the waiting list. So if you're on the waiting list, it means that you were reviewed by the panel. The panel considered your work acceptable, but there was not space for you at that time. So then you can resubmit. You can reapply.
And you can always resubmit new work. If you think you've suddenly done a body of work that's much better, submit the new work. And that's not going to be even seen by the same person who saw it the last time. We keep a record of that as well. So if you submit day after tomorrow and you're put on the waiting list, you can submit again in May and send in a whole new body of work, and that work will be reviewed by somebody different than the person who reviewed you in September.